Welcome to the Dream Hub podcast, where we dive into the mystical world of dreams and explore their profound impact on our lives. I'm your host, Melissa Johnson, and today I'm honored to have here with me Linda Yael Schiller, a seasoned dream expert, trauma therapist, and author with over 40 years of experience in the field. Linda's unique approach combines a variety of healing modalities, making her a leading voice in dreamwork for healing. She's an author of several transformative books, including PTSD Dreams and Modern Dreamwork, and she's currently working on her third book, Ancestral Dreaming. Linda is also a professor at Boston University School of Social Work and an active member of the IASD. Join us as we delve into the multi-layered aspects of dreamwork and how it can be a powerful tool for addressing trauma, nightmares, and more. Thank you so much for joining me today, Linda.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show.
Your journey in dreamwork and trauma therapy is really extensive and really inspiring, and I'm really curious to hear so much more. Could you share with us what initially drew you into specializing with dreams and their healing potential?
Sure. Always, you know, from my youth on, from my childhood on, I've been interested in uncanny and esoteric ways of knowing. And I've always been drawn sort of to the mystical hand in hand with science. So it wasn't an either or proposition. But I didn't really get started in dream work per se until my adult life, when I was invited by a friend to join a dream circle that she was forming. And my initial response to her was to say yes. And then the next thing I said was, what's a dream circle? So my intuition knew to say yes, even before I exactly knew what I was saying yes to. And that was the start of a lifelong love affair with dreams and dreaming. And then as I continued in my career, particularly doing a lot of work in the field of trauma therapy, I began to incorporate the dream work with the trauma healing and wove those two together.
That's great. I love it when our bodies are just like, yes, and you don't hold back and you don't even know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
So when you say that before you knew about dream work and you were having these mystical ways of knowing, was that sort of more like intuition and psychic abilities, or what were you doing there before dream work? Just out of curiosity.
I think that I was listening when what Reich would call listening with the third ear, but I was listening to not only with my ears, but with my body. And I would experience synchronistic experiences and just go, oh, wow, you know, not really know what it was. And I have one memory when I was, after I graduated in high school, excuse me, at college, my girlfriend and I went to Europe and traveled around Europe. And I remember being in Greece, and we were climbing up a mountain or to go over to the other side, where we heard there was a wonderful place for nude swimming. And I got to the top of the mountain, and the landscape was not only beautiful, but I could feel the rocks vibrating and talking to me. And it was one of those aha moments of, the earth is more alive than we realize. And I didn't quite know what I was experiencing then, but I remember it still. And I can hearken back to that moment of saying, oh, okay, there's more here than our Western left brain linear minds can hold on to.
That's beautiful. That's fascinating. I love that. I know that I kind of feel like I know the feeling that you're talking about. I remember as a kid going to the beach, and it was down in Sydney, and there was all these rock cliffs all around the beach, and just standing on them, and it felt like this like humming, like kind of feeling coming out.
You know, it's so interesting, because where you were standing, and actually where I was standing at that moment as well, was at the interface of earth and air and water. And there's something about the meeting of all these worlds at the, there was a threshold liminal place to be. And it sounds like we both had a threshold liminal experience there.
Oh, wow, that's beautiful. I never thought of the beach being a liminal place, but it is. Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks. So I'm so curious to speak to you. So my husband, and for the people listening along, my husband suffers from PTSD, unfortunately. He was in the army for over 15 years, and it's been a long healing journey for us because he was diagnosed very late. You know, he was, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me, you know, one of those. So it took a while. Yeah. And he blocked out his dreams because of it. And he's just started getting them back after about 10 years. So that's very exciting. But I can see all the links with PTSD and with nightmares and all these sorts of things. So I'm so curious to speak to you about it. Tell me, do you want to just tell me about it, whatever you want to share about, like, if I was someone that was like, what is that?
Sure. Well, PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. And not everyone who's experienced trauma gets PTSD, although people who have experienced long-term or repeated trauma are obviously much more likely to suffer afterwards than those who had a single episode, for example. And people like your husband, who was saw combat off and on for 15 years, it does a number on not only your physical body, but on your nervous system, on your psyche, and on your soul. And I don't know what the military is like, and you're in Australia, is it?
Yeah.
But I imagine it's pretty similar to militaries all over the world, which is get the people back out to the front line as soon as possible, you know, let them come home, catch their breath, have some R&R, and then back to the front line. And there's not a chance to really process what happened in between times. So in situations like this, what your husband had is what's called public trauma. There's no question in anybody's mind he was in war zones, he was combat, people were hurt, killed, maimed, all sorts of horrible things happened in his vicinity. And nobody questions whether or not that happened because it was in public. Same thing with natural disasters. There's also the whole realm of what's called private trauma, which are things that happen in private, in secrecy, in homes, in religious institutions, in schools, where they happen behind closed doors and nobody's there to witness or bear witness. And so then there's even an additional layer in addition to the trauma of the physical abuse or the sexual abuse or the neglect. There's the added trauma of nobody knows, it's a secret. Who would even believe me if I told them? So there's like an additional layer there of either being threatened, don't tell or else, or feeling like there'd be a threat if I told, or it's my word against theirs. So who am I? I'm a kid, or I'm a teenager, or I'm a young person, or in situations of battering, and even someone who's not young. There's so many conflicts of interest. So trauma can happen in many, many different ways. And when our body, mind, system is able to metabolize and process the traumatic events that happen to us, then we have a way of making sense out of things and understanding it. And it doesn't just live inside us. When we haven't been given the opportunity to process what has happened and be able to move the events from it feels like it's still happening now, which is one of the features of PTSD, that sense of the past is still in my face. It's as if this nightmare or this flashback, as if it's still happening, or this trigger, I hear a loud sound and I jump and I run and I duck, even though it was somebody dropped a dish in the kitchen. But my body says, oh my God, there's an attack. Right. Until that can get processed and worked through, it's as if you're still in the midst of the traumatic events. So what is necessary to be able to sort of digest this is to be able to work through what, in combination of talking and the somatic work, and of course, processing your dreams and nightmares as well, so that you sort of reorder your timeline. So the past can be something that happened before and doesn't feel like it's still happening now. And once you can do that, then you get an open window and open door into a future without feeling like you're still living in trauma.
So do you use dream work to help them to process the trauma? I suppose when they're dreaming, it's like you're embodying the experience in a way.
Right. When someone is having nightmares, it's like a sleeping flashback. I don't know if your husband or, but many military survivors, many vets have waking flashbacks where it feels like, seems like, and they're reacting as if they're back in the front. In a nightmare, it's the same idea, except you're sound asleep. Even worse, of course, is if you're not able to process that out, then you get repetitive nightmares, and it happens over and over and over again.
This is something that came up for me recently was, you know, some people are in a nightmare and then they wake themselves up. They're like, oh, I'm in a nightmare. Wake up. And they wake themselves up out of it. And then I feel like because you're not actually getting to the end of the dream and being able to process what's going on there, you wake yourself up out of it, then that's when it's going to just come back again. And then you end up having the recurring ones because you're not waiting all the way through the end. But I think people think that waking yourself up from a nightmare is the thing to do. Like, oh, I saved myself from it. But really, it's just sort of going to come back again. Is that true?
Well, I would say both yes and no. So if someone is able in their dream or their nightmare to become lucid, in other words, to recognize they're having a dream and then wake themselves up, that's actually very positive as long as it doesn't end there. Because if that's all that happens, all you've done then is wake yourself up from the immediate experience of a remembering that is physiological as well as emotional and mental, but you haven't processed it. So what needs to happen is if someone is able to wake themselves up from a dream or they spontaneously wake up, write it down for starters. The first thing I always recommend is get it down on paper, get it out of your head and onto a piece of paper or on your device if you're typing, or tell your partner if you sleep with someone, so that it's seen and heard in another place besides just inside your head and your body. So that's step one. And then you can go back either with a partner, with a good friend, or with someone who's trained in dream work and therapy, in trauma work. Then you can go back and rework the dream and rework the images and to do what's called IRT, which is image rehearsal therapy. It's a form of dream work. I tell my clients who wake up from bad dreams or nightmares, this isn't necessarily where the dream ended. This is just where you woke up. So part of my way of working with nightmares is using Jungian active imagination. That's part of the Gaia method, but it's to continue the dream forward as if you were still having it, but this time you're awake and you have choice. So you continue the dream forward until there's a resolution where you're safe. That begins the healing process to be able to change the outcome that you couldn't change the first time you had to live through it.
That's great. Do you also do EMDR therapy?
Yes, I do, actually. And as a matter of fact, my dream work method is based on two prongs. And the first part of the Gaia method, which stands for guided active imagination approach, is you start with safety and you start with establishing resources and a safe place. And a lot of the protocol that I designed there is based on EMDR protocol. So I do a similar thing with this dream work as I would do with someone I was doing EMDR with. And then part two is once someone is resourced and safe and has a posse of helpers and magic wands or, you know, angels or their wife or their cat or whatever they need to feel safe in their imagined world, then we move into looking at the scary stuff in the nightmare from a place of safety. And then we start to use active imagination in a variety of different ways, depending on the dream material.
That's great. So for those listening, EMDR is a form of therapy where the therapist will guide you back into an imaginal place, but like a memory images and you do a series of eye movements. And I believe that that mimics something in your brain so that you think that you're in REM sleep and it can lower. Well, is this right?
Do you want to explain it? Very, very close. Yes. So EMDR stands for, the E is eye movement and then desensitization and reprocessing. So the EM part, the eye movement, is the same. So you, if you know, if you're working with a therapist and they're going back and forth with their fingers and you're following it with your eyes, it mimics what our brains and our eyes do in REM sleep. So there's absolutely a correlation. The key for EMDR is that there's bilateral stimulation to our body mind. And since Francine Shapiro initiated this form of treatment back in, I think it was either the 70s or the 80s, she's the initiator of EMDR, it's been also discovered that you can do it with your eyes open and do the EMs, the eye movements, but also, as you said, you can actually do it with your eyes closed because you can do it with tapping on opposite sides of your body, whether it's on your knees or to do what's called a butterfly hug, where you put your hands, you know, if you can see my thumbs, I make a little butterfly here, and you put them over your heart and you tap opposite sides. And this is great, by the way, for kids, because they love this idea, and it works with group processing as well. And it can be done auditorily as well. If you have headphones, right, and it's a series of sounds, one ear, then the other ear. The key is you're crossing midline in your brain, the corpus callosum. So you're activating right brain, left brain, right brain, left brain. And that is what allows us to not only become desensitized, meaning reduce the threshold of upset from the material, but allows us to reprocess, because we get to use our whole brain then in a way that when we're in the middle of trauma and we have a fight, flight, freeze, et cetera, response, we're really only using our lizard brain, right? Our animal brain, our let me get out of danger brain. And we're not thinking the whole thing through. Yeah. So this allows us to go back and incorporate that.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be really helping with the creative problem solving type of mind that we lose when we get overwhelmed and stressed.
Exactly right. That's right. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Thank you. Are there common themes that you've noticed in dreams from people who have suffered from trauma?
Sure. I'm going to answer that question, but let me just back up one moment and say that sometimes the dreams are actual replications of things that happened. Like, let's just say there was someone was shot nearby, and in your dream, someone's being shot. So that would be a replication, like a flashback of what's happening. Frequently, it's in symbolic form, in metaphor form. It's not what actually happened, but the emotional story in the dream, the emotional narrative, replicates the feelings that you had in the initial trauma. So some of the symbolic or metaphoric themes or images that we see often are themes of violence, themes of being trapped, themes of being chased, themes of being threatened, themes of being lost. So if you think about sort of negative emotional responses in the realm of fear, anxiety, grief, anger, any sort of metaphoric theme that goes along with the harder emotions might be the kind of theme that shows up in a dream. Mm-hmm. Natural disasters, for example, feeling the tsunami is going to overwhelm me any second and I will die. There's often this threat feeling in a PTSD dream.
So I guess then that's also, like, you know, some people don't know that they have PTSD or they've gone through these traumas, like even the ones you were saying, like the personal and private traumas, and they may not even register that they've got PTSD. And so, right. I suppose if you've got these common themes showing up in your dreams a lot, then it would be something to look into or to consider a bit deeper. I think people think it's so common to have dreams of the themes that you've just listed, because sometimes they are common, but if I was having dreams like that, I'd definitely be looking into it a bit deeper.
Absolutely. And we can have dreams that reflect what's happened to us in our own lives. And our dreams are also multi-layered. So it's not just either or, it can be both and. So they reflect things that happened in our lives. They reflect things that happened in our family in the past or in the present. And we can also have dreams for humanity and dreams that reflect the situation in the world that may not be a personal trauma. But man, you know, we've been living through hard times for the last bunch of years, you know, from the pandemic to climate change to, you know, wars all over the place. And that's actually what prompted me to write my second book of PTS Dreams was, you know, the process of being in the pandemic and global worldwide trauma that everyone was suffering at one shape, way or form.
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of collective dreaming about those things. And when there was like terrorist attacks and things like that, everyone was having similar dreams about it. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
I just wanted to know what advice you might have for listeners that are working on trying to transform their relationship with their nightmares. Like what's some advice that you could give to help them foster some healing?
Sure. That's a good question. So there are things you can do before, during, and after you sleep. So before, create a safe, calm environment for you to sleep in. Turn your devices off. Stay away from screens for at least an hour before you go to bed. Some of this is just good sleep hygiene too. If at all possible, don't watch the news. I mean, stay informed. I'm not saying put your head in the sand, but if you're a thin boundaried person and you know things get in easily under your skin, just don't watch the image. That's me. You know, I'm speaking from my own self
true.
Here.
I got banned from the news during COVID. My husband would turn it off because it had my anxiety go through the roof. And he's like, stop and look around. Like, no, nothing's hurting you. Everyone's fine. You know, just put it. And then we haven't turned it back on. We just disconnected the antenna to the TV and we'll only watch movies like Netflix or something, but we won't watch TV anymore because turning it off had such a good impact on me.
Yeah. Well, bravo on your husband's good advice and on you for taking it.
Thanks.
So creating a ritual before going to bed that helps you wind down from the day can also help. It might be you take a shower or bath and you think about washing off the upset or the stress or the scary things that either happened or you heard about or saw during the day. So there's that. And then when you go to bed at night, to really invoke some kind of healing presence for yourself, surround yourself or your bed or your bedroom or your house with an egg of light, right? With healing light of some capacity that keeps you safe and protected. And even for the skeptics, you know, who might be listening, it actually works. You don't have to believe in it for it to work. It's like penicillin. You don't understand how it works, but it works anyway. Mm-hmm. It really does. So if you start with getting good, strong boundaries between yourself and any upset, internal or external, before you sleep, you're much more likely to have a peaceful night's sleep. Have your journal by your bed. And the other thing you can do before going to sleep is to incubate dreams. And what incubation means is before you go to sleep, if you have an issue or a dilemma or a problem that you want some help with or some answers for, write it down in your dream journal. And the more specific you write down, the easier it will be to decode the dream that comes following the question or the quest that you're seeking. So you write your dream down then when you capture it on the same page as your question. Whether or not you can see a connection, there'll be one somewhere if you and some partners work with it. So these are just a few things. There are more you could do before sleeping. When you go to sleep, there's that liminal space when you're just falling asleep called the hypnopompic zone, and you're just waking up called the hypnagogic zone. These are Jungian terms where you're not quite fully asleep or fully awake. When you have dreams or images in these liminal spaces, count them as dreams, because they come from the same place the dreams come from. Write those down too. And in these liminal spaces, you usually will have more control over working with your dream images than most people have when they're sound asleep. So you have options there for saying, well, you know, the saber-toothed tiger is chasing in me in my dream, and I know I'm just about to wake up, but I think before I wake up, I'm going to magically sprout wings and fly to the top of the tree and be safe from the tiger. Or somehow I will turn and face the tiger and I'll say, stop. And the tiger will stop. And then I can have a conversation and find out who or what is actually chasing me here. So these are things you can do in these liminal spaces. And then lucid dreaming is a whole other conversation that it's very important. You can learn to lucid dream, to be aware that you're dreaming while you're dreaming. And there are things you can do to get more skillful at that. And then when you wake up, write it down, even if you don't want to. And this is a thing with a lot of trauma survivors who have nightmares. Nobody wants to remember their nightmare. Like, who would? You're terrified. Like, I don't want to write that down. I don't remember that. If you don't, you take the chance of forgetting it, and then you have to redream it.
Yeah.
Until you finally say, okay, I'm going to stop running from this. I'll face up to it, whatever it is. Start writing it down, and then you can start working with it.
That's a really good point. I've heard of a few people that I've spoken to, and I'm like, how are your dreams going? Have you been writing them down? And he says, no, I haven't been writing them down because they've only been nightmares. I don't want to write those ones down. It's not worth it. And I'm like, no, they're the juiciest ones. Like, when
so
it
a
comes...
nightmare, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And a nightmare basically is an unfinished dream. A nightmare is an SOS from your unconscious saying there's something you need to know and do that you don't yet know consciously and you haven't done, but your unconscious already knows it and it's trying its damnedest to tell you. If you don't listen, it's going to just keep telling you and escalate until it hits you over the head with it.
Yeah. When you do you help people to do dream interpretation to understand the symbology or the meanings in their dreams?
So I do what we call in IASD, the International Association for the Study of the Dream, we call it dream work, right? I'm not interpreting. I'm not telling you what your dream means. I'm not saying, oh, if you dreamt of a cat, it means this. Because dreams and all the symbols are, A, they're multi-determined. They could mean many, many different things. And B, the highest authority on the meaning of the dream is the dreamer, him or herself. So we can work together to peel back the layers and find out what your associations are and what your personal experience has been or what you know about X, whatever the X theme is. And there could be many, many different things. The one where you get the aha is the one that's right for you. Mine might be different, but that's if it's not my dream, then it's your dream.
Yeah.
So we definitely work the dream and work the symbology to find out what is it trying to tell us.
Yeah, you need to work with it. Hey, it's not one answer fits all symbols.
Correct. That's right.
Yeah. Your work emphasizes embodied approach to dream work. Could you explain what this entails and why it's essential for holistic healing?
Sure. So as a psychotherapist, I work from a somatic embodied perspective where I'm looking at and incorporating the intersection of body, mind, and spirit. So I don't separate them out. I look at them as a unified whole. And when I say spirit, that doesn't just mean a religious connection or affiliation. It might, and that's wonderful if you are connected with a church, a synagogue, a mosque, a temple. It can also simply mean that you're tuned in to and paying attention to the sense of what is the universe? What is your connection with the divine? What is your connection with that which makes you alive? So we tune into the spiritual aspect and we also listen to the body because the body tells us things before our mind can grasp them. Right? When we have a feeling, right, we feel it in our body. That's why it's called a feeling, because we are feeling it. So we learn to listen to the sensations, and I help direct people to tune in and pay attention to the physical sensations in their body and what those might be telling them, as well as what their thoughts and their emotions are telling them. And working from an embodied somatic perspective, there's a lot of different methods of doing embodied work. The granddaddy of embodied work is probably Eugene Gendlin from his work on focusing. And he coined the phrase a felt sense. So when I'm working with someone, whether it's in therapy or in their dream work, I might say, take a minute and just sit quietly and tune in to the felt sense in your body. And what do you notice? To be able to put words to something that is a sensation allows us to do that, accessing both parts of our brain again, right? Back to that theme. And then there's various forms of movement interventions as well that I do with people that's based on somatic practices, such as Peter Levine, his work Waking the Tiger, and Pat Ogden, psychomotor psychotherapy, as well as constellation work and many, many forms of doing dance, movement, theater with the dreams themselves.
That's really fun. We did a bit of that in some of the classes that I did, and it was like acting out the dream and being the different characters and physically doing it. Not just Beautiful. Being the actual character, but being like, okay, you're the car and you're a table and like making a play right. out of it. Yeah.
So what you're describing is a wonderful way of doing dream work, which is the gestalt perspective, where we are every being as well as everything in the dream. You know, so what's the tree part of you, or the table part of you, or, you know, the screaming toddler part of you?
Yeah. That's always really interesting to go through that and just seeing what is those objects' purpose? Like, why do they feel like they're here? And it just gives an extra layer into all the meanings of it. So right. Let's move on. I want to hear about your new book, Ancestral Dreaming. Can you give us a sneak peek into it?
Sure. This is another one of those sort of synchronistic things that happened that I paid attention to. And I got a email a couple of years ago, maybe two at this point, from a gentleman who is an American aid volunteer working in the Ukraine. And he's a member of IASD, the Dream Organization. And he came across my book and he was delighted with it. And he'd been doing dream work himself and was really interested in it. And he said he's working as a volunteer helping the Ukrainian people to deal with and cope with their traumas in various ways. And he said, I'm using your book to help these folks deal with the war trauma. And I was just thrilled that it could be, you know, put to use in that way. And as we got to know each other better and sort of shared stories, it was a full circle in terms of the connection with ancestors, because some of my ancestors are from the Ukraine. Like my grandfather Wow. and his family were born in Ukraine, and they had to escape and leave at the turn of the 19th century because of pogroms. So now, all of a sudden, something that I've written is being used to help people in a country where my family was once mistreated and needed to run. And it just felt like such a full circle that it was just brilliant. And it started me thinking about ancestors. And then I started to have dreams that had to do with my own ancestors. And sort of one thing led to another, and my dreams were starting to put me on the road to this topic, first personally and then more broadly. And I started to offer some courses and some workshops on ancestral healing. And then last summer, I got a call. It was really lovely. I got a call from my publisher who said, you know, we're wondering if you're writing anything because we're looking for another book. You happen to be writing anything. I said, funny you should mention it. So that was kind of how the actual book itself started. So the sneak preview of what I've, you know, I've, so I sent an outline and a table of contents. And I have identified sort of six ways in which our ancestors might be trying to reach us or contact us, or six types of calls from our ancestors. I call them shouts or whispers. And one could be they're simply saying, you're not alone. I'm still here. My body might have died, but I'm here. So that could be one. Two could be, I have some kind of a gift for you or a blessing for you, and I want to offer it to you. That could be another. Three is, I have some help or some advice for you. You have some kind of struggle in your life. Something's going on. And from my perspective over here on the other side, I've got some wisdom for you and something that might help. Four is, when I died, I was suffering and I was in pain and I have not healed yet. And I still need you to help me heal and go all the way over to the other side. Five is a variation on that, which is ancestors who are holding a grudge. They're still mad as hell and they want you to continue to carry the, you know, the cudgel, not the torch, for them. So how do we go and put that to rest and put it to peace as well? And then the sixth one is remember. Our ancestors are saying, remember, remember me. Tell your children, tell my story. Don't let my name be forgotten. So those six layers of potential, and there could be others, but that's just what I came up with. The dreams and the synchronicities and the work can come through at any or several of those layers in terms of how do we meet and greet our ancestors? What is needed from us? What is needed from them? And they could be human beings, people who are literally in our genetic family line. They could be people who are not in our family line, but are still our ancestors. Or it could be places on the earth that's our homeland in some way. That is part of our ancestral history as well.
Wow, so that's beautiful. That's so moving. So cool. The first step that you said, I know I resonated with that, of like how they can just leave little messages to say, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Like I live in Australia in the bushy rainforest area, and I moved into this, the day that we moved into this house, and my granddad was Scottish, and in our garden, there was just randomly a Scottish thistle just growing. And that was sort of like his symbol. And I was just like, that is so out of place and so rare. It was just so nice. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, that's nice. It's like I knew he was still with me. So.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear a story from you. Like, do you have a personal dream that you'd like to share with us? Or, a story that's like a real lived experience that kind of shows off what the book's all about.
Well, I can tell you two stories. One is mine and one is a good friend of mine just shared with me. So however many years ago it was, when my dad died, my mom said that the night he died, a red cardinal came and knocked at her window and tapped on the window pane, and that had never happened before. And then the cardinal came and tapped at her window every night for 7 days. And she knew that it was the spirit of, is my stepdad, his name is Bud. It was the spirit of Bud, you know, tapping to let her know that he was okay. And then it stopped and it didn't happen again. But now, anytime any of us in the family have a visit of a cardinal, we always say, hi, Bud. And when they come as a pair, it's like my mom's there too. Because sometimes it's the dad comes, or sometimes the mom comes, or sometimes they come together. And we have a nesting pair that show up every year in my yard. They come back over and over and over again. And I can feel it when he's there. So that's one story of, you know, of a connection. And then the other story is, a friend of mine said that, ironically, in this case, her dad had passed some years before as well. I didn't even realize it was connected there until I came out of my mouth. But she had an ongoing conversation with him. She said she talked to him often and listened to his advice and feel comforted by him. And it was, you know, common. But her mom at one point was having terrible, terrible headaches. And she took her mom for every kind of test that she could think of under the sun, and nothing turned up you know, the brain scans and the neurology workups and everything. And her mom, you know, was really not doing well. And so one day she went into the kitchen. Her mom was in the bedroom and she said, "Dad, you got any advice for me? What should I do? What's going on with mom's headaches?" And she said to me, "I told him I need to know right now and really, really clearly," because she was worried and frustrated. Within seconds of having her send that request out to her dad, her mom kind of stumbled out of bed, stood in the doorway of her room, and said to my friend, "You think it could be my eyes?" And she said, "Well, I don't know, but let's find out." So the one doctor she hadn't made an appointment with yet was an ophthalmologist, because they were thinking headaches. They weren't thinking vision. Well, he did a bunch of tests. He got him to a doctor, and the doctor turned to my friend after he'd examined her mother and looked at her, and he said, "You know, most of the time when I see people with this condition, they're already blind."
Wow.
She wasn't. And they caught it in time, and they gave her proper treatment, and she stopped having headaches and retained her vision until she died herself. So within seconds of asking her father, who had passed some years ago, for help, the words came out of her mother's mouth mm-hmm. of exactly what was needed, mm-hmm. which was pretty amazing.
That's so cool. I love that she just goes and asks out loud and just says it. And I think, I don't know, some people hold back on like talking to spirits or talking to the other side and think, oh, maybe they're not there or whatever. But how do you know until you give it a go, right?
Right. And people who say, "Oh, I don't think they're there. They've never visited me. You know, my mom never visited me, or my granddad never visited me." I say, "Did you invite them? Did you ask?" Because some spirits, you know, need an invitation. It's like you don't just show up for somebody's house for dinner. You wait for an invitation. It kind of can be the same for some.
I would suggest, I say, if you want someone to show up in your dreams like that, like write them a letter and have a conversation with them and then tuck it under your pillow at night.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely. And for your friend, for any listeners who might have kids, it's a wonderful way to get off the hook, particularly with like your teenagers. But anytime, you know, you want to give your kid advice or they say, "What should I do?" But you know they're not going to take your word for what they should do because you're the mom or you're the dad. So in our house, I said, "Why don't you ask grandma, or why don't you go ask Zadie?" And my daughter would go off. And I don't know if she would dream or just think about it or if it would come to her in some way, but she'd come back later with very, very good advice from one of her grandparents who have all passed away at this point. And it was great because then we didn't have to get into any kind of power struggle about it.
That is really, really good advice. I'm going to use that. I've got a 4.5-year-old and she definitely believes in spirits. She thinks that they're the stars, and she talks to our dog and nanny and things like that up in the sky. So I'm going to use that next time.
That's
a good one.
That's lovely. Wouldn't we all as easily be able to talk to the stars as your daughter?
Yeah. Could you share an impactful dream or dream work experience from your practices that highlighted the transformative power of dream work?
Yeah, there's someone who's in my dream circle, and a dream circle is basically a group of people who get together and do dream work together. And I've been running dream circles for, you know, close to 40 years, and they're ongoing. So I close the circle at 6 people because that's a large enough size, both for practical reasons of to give people enough airtime, and also because my office space is of a size where that's about as many as we can fit comfortably into the room. So I have people, you know, come and go, but they tend to stay a long time. So one of my current members has been with the group now for 18 years, you know, without a pause. So one member of the group for years and years and years was having repetitive dreams of her mouth being stuck, filled with taffy or filled with chewing gum. And nothing seemed to work. And we did all kinds of dream work interventions with her, you know, imagined in waking life, sort of pulling that stuff out of her mouth, or what was it exactly that was keeping her mouth shut? And as we worked with this theme, it came back to the question of voice. Where was her voice? Where was she not able to speak what was true for her, both in her current life as an adult, and then were there places in her childhood where that was true too? So what we put together with her was that in her past, her mom was very, very depressed and was in and out of the hospital when she was little for depression. And the Dream Circle member and her sister were not able to talk about it at all. And their dad coped, you know, the best they could, he could. But her mom died quite young and they never got to talk about it. So there was a lot of grief and anger that was stuck in her body and it kept her from speaking. So when we made the connection between this old grief, this complicated grief of a mother who can't be a mother because she's so depressed and being told, we don't talk about that. Nobody, you know, we just pretend it's not there. It got stuck in her system. And when we put the connection together, she started to have a voice. She started to be able to speak up. At work, she had a boss or a supervisor who was not the kindest. And she started to be able to stand up for herself and contradict or challenge the supervisor at work. So we got to a wonderful plateau of her getting her voice back. So there was a real transformative piece of the dream work. And then not only did she get her voice back, but she said, I've been screaming in the night. And my husband tells me, I wake him up screaming, and not just screaming, but swearing like a sailor in my sleep. And I don't even know why. So now we're on to the next stage. We got the taffy out. We got her unstuck. But there's still something she now feels free to give voice to, but isn't done yet. So we're still in process with the next stage of this.
That's so awesome. It's so funny how it's coming out now in her sleep, but at least it's coming out, right?
Right, right. And it's an example also of the ongoing nature of peeling back layers of insight and layers of association and layers of connection. As we keep changing and growing ourselves, our dreams are showing us where we are next. What's the next layer? Mm. Where are we going with this?
Mm. Yeah. That's really good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like how when you were speaking to her about it, you were asking her, like, is there anywhere in your life now that you feel this way? But is there also anywhere in the past in your life that you felt that way? And I like how you go back there and not think about just right now, because I think people think about dream work and think, oh, it's just right now. Like, as of today, I don't know, but it's looking further back and healing things from the past. Yeah.
It can be. Not necessarily, but it's certainly, particularly with repetitive dreams or repetitive themes, if they keep reoccurring, it's probably something undigested, unprocessed.
Yeah, like childhood.
Somewhere along the line, I learned this great question to ask someone, what's the age of the youngest part of you that's in the room with us right now? What's the age of the youngest part of you that's resonating with this dream? And they'll tell, and they'll, if they don't overthink it, you know, I say, just from your gut, don't overthink it. Boom, 5, 10, 3, 14. That's where some of the source material is going to be found.
So interesting.
Mm.
That's great. Are you going to the conference this year?
I am. Are you going to the conference
this
year?
Yes, I am. Oh, it's my first year and I'm very excited. So we'll have to come and meet
we'll
up
get
with
to
you.
Hang out.
Yes, you can show me around.
I'd be delighted to. I'll introduce you to all my friends.
Great. Yeah, I'm very excited. From the interview today, is there any other topics that you wanted to discuss that I haven't asked you about? Or is there anything else that you wanted to share?
Thank you so much for asking. I guess I would just tell people if they were interested in learning more about sort of my practice or my work or the books, I have a website, and each of the two books that I have out has their own website. So they're, they could look at that if they want. It's the website is lyndayaelschiller.com. And then each book, one is moderndreamwork.com and the other is ptsdreams.com. So they could see what's happening. And I have a blog. So a lot of the stuff I'm writing about in with ancestor work now and ancestral dreaming, I have snippets up on the blog as well. And you can access the blog through the website or go straight to the blog, which is awaketoyourdreams.com.
Beautiful. I'm going to get those links and put them in the show notes. So when people are
Oh,
listening, they
great.
can just go down and click on it. That's awesome. I'm
Thank you.
really excited for your new book to come out. I'm definitely getting that. I'm very curious. I want to read it
Oh,
all.
thanks.
I'm ready to read it
Nobody.
now. So hurry up. No.
Oh, well, you can have sneak previews in the blogs.
Yes, I will. I'll be keeping
Because
up with
knowing
that.
the way the publishing industry works, I'm going to be turning it in this summer. It's when they want, because that's what my contract is. Then they'll edit it. Then I'll edit their edits. So I'm guessing it'll be out in about a year and a half from now, give or take. So by the
Great.
time it like hits the shelves.
Great. That gives us something to look forward to.
Oh, thanks.
Awesome.
Oh, terrific. And I'm so excited that you're going to be at Roald Dahk and we'll get a chance to actually meet in person. That's really
Yeah.
wonderful.
So, Linda, it's been an absolute privilege to have you on the Dream Hub podcast today. Your wisdom and dedication to the field of dream work and trauma healing offers our listeners invaluable insights into navigating their own dreamscapes, personal growth, and healing. I really appreciate your time and I can't wait to meet
Oh, good. Me too. I'll see you in a couple months.
you. Okay, thanks,
All
Linda.
right. So
Bye.
long. Bye.
Thank you for sharing your expertise and spirit with us today. And to my listeners, I hope that this episode has inspired you to explore the healing potential of your dreams and to approach your own dream work with curiosity and openness. Remember, the journey through our dreams is a journey to ourselves. Until next time, keep dreaming, exploring, and uncovering the wisdom that lies within.